hallway. If she held her head just so, looking not at what she wanted to see but several feet to the side, 2 o'clock from noon, then she could make it out. 2 long cords hanging down from the blinds above the only window in her room. Yes, maybe she could reach those. But the wheelchair would likely not fit in the space between the bed and the window. Out of reach then, probably. The room would stay dim. Mildred Weber felt for, then pressed, the second button on her large wristwatch.
The time is 10:17 a.m.
The small mechanical voice from the watch. It was a man's voice, and Mildred could see his face. He was nice-looking, clean, and he knew what time it was.
Good qualities in a man,
Mildred said out loud, though she knew he wasn't real. But he had been a good friend to her for several years now, after the first watch had quit working. It had been a woman's voice on that first watch, and Mildred had never liked her. She sounded sharp and was always in a hurry, annoyed at being asked the time. Mildred was glad when that watch, that woman, had decided to stop working, to call it quits. They were both relieved. Mildred's daughter, Peggy, had brought her the new watch. But, between remembering to tell Peggy about the dead watch, Peggy remembering to order a new one, the new one eventually arriving, and Peggy finally remembering to bring it, Mildred had not known what time it was for weeks. She would go for hours without hearing anyone speak to her. Hours, weeks, what did it matter? Time was a long hallway. But that hallway was always mopped and polished, shiny and shiny and shiny. Even though Mildred had trouble seeing the pictures in the hall, the print of the wallpaper, the numbers and names beside each room, even the decorations of the changing holiday seasons, she could tell that long hallway floor was always glossy and clean. The dark spot in the middle of her vision was surrounded by crystalline glows of color, a kaleidoscope of turning flashes and bursts of light. Now that was a shiny floor. She would sometimes roll her wheelchair to her doorway and watch for Jimmy, the maintenance man, to come working his way down the hall with his big buffer machine, giving the floor the once-over. Jimmy was big and broad and had fat arms and no sleeves. Mildred thought she might marry him someday. Those were good qualities in a man, being able to do hard work and keep the place clean. Jimmy would always say, "Good morning," or "Good afternoon," but Mildred never thought to answer until he was way on down the hall. Jimmy would be out of sight, just the low-down whir swish of his machine continuing from the far end, the long, thick orange electric cord still moving like an eel across Mildred's threshold. A couple of times, she had leaned way down from her chair and tried to grab the cord, but she couldn't quite reach it, and anyway, it kept moving. Maybe someday Jimmy would leave it there while he went out for a smoke break.
The time is 10:32 a.m.
Such a nice man. She was sure he wore a tie when he told her the time. Mildred's wrists were aching and weak. Her arms were heavy. Old Arthur was really talking to her this morning. But she managed to roll herself across the short span of her room and through the doorway. No Jimmy. No orange cord across the threshold. Mildred made her way down the hall, a few inches at a time. Silhouettes moved briskly toward her, on past. Some said hello, some didn't. Mildred had no idea who these people were or why they were in her house. Their presence was upsetting sometimes, but other times she was just glad to not be alone. Oh, wait. It came to her. She did know who they were. They kept this place running, and they helped her when she needed help. Oh, yes, and they cooked. This was not her house. Well, it was and it wasn't. She had her bed table and her big comfortable chair. She'd had those for years and years. On the wall were pictures of her family, of her husband Vernon. She was still so angry at him for leaving, for going to the store and not coming back. But he wasn't coming back. That was real. Vernon was gone. The concrete weight of that clear thought made Mildred gasp, then drop her chin to her chest and sob softly. The hallway was a tunnel. A clock ticked far away, muffled, slowing.
"Well, Mildred, what's the trouble?"
A gentle voice beside her, the dark vision, the blur of tears.
"Who are you, Peggy?"
Mildred's voice quivered and broke.
"No."
The woman in the pink scrubs and white Crocs stretched out the word.
"Now you know who I am. It's Jenny. We've known each other a long time, haven't we? What's making you sad, Mildred?"
"Oh."
The sound was a shaky release.
"Vernon's gone. He's gone. He is, isn't he?"
Yeah, he is, Mildred," Jenny said, shaking her head as she pulled down the corners of her mouth,
putting a hand on Mildred's shoulder.
"We never quite get over it, do we? But he loved you, and you've got your kids and some friends here, and me, and you know I love you, dear. Say, it's getting close to lunchtime. How about if we roll on down, take a look at the menu board, and see what your choices are for lunch?"
Jenny stepped behind Mildred's chair and rolled it slowly down the hall, occasionally reaching over to pat the back of Mildred's neck. They parked at a spot where one hallway met another at a T. There was a very large whiteboard with very large letters MTWTFSS, and below each letter, written as large as would fit in the space, the entree choices and side dishes for each day of the week.
"So, today's Friday, so you have your choice of fish patty with tartar sauce or Salisbury steak. And on the side, it's either fruit cup or green beans. And, oh, looky here, banana cream pie for dessert."
"I'm not a Catholic," Mildred said with some disdain. "I remember when my kids were in school, it was fish every Friday, whether you were a Catholic or not. I don't know how they pulled that one off, but it always irked me. It's not like any other church has got to pick something for the menu."
Mildred's lips were a tight, wrinkled circle now, and she was breathing heavily through her nose.
"I take it you don't want the fish, then,"
Jenny said, her eyes still on the board.
"No, I guess I will,"
Mildred answered, her breathing slowing now.
"It's usually pretty good, and the Salisbury steak is always so mushy."
A random memory came into Mildred's field, a picture, actually. It was a page from an old World Book encyclopedia, clear as a photograph.
"I bet I know something you don't,"
Mildred said. She was suddenly resenting Jenny treating her like she was a stupid child, and it was showing in her voice.
"Did I do something wrong, Mildred?"
"I said, I bet I know something you don't."
"And what would that be?"
Jenny's long work night day and her patience were both about done.
"Do you know why it's called a Salisbury steak?"
Mildred said, with the air of a lawyer who is about to trap a witness.
"What? Well, no, I never really thought about it. That's just what everybody calls it."
"It was created by a Dr. John Salisbury, who was an expert on diet and nutrition. He was from New York, and he would eat those steaks 3 times a day.
Mildred could nearly read the words on the World Book page in her memory.
"So, I win,"
she said with finality, settling it.
"Okay, then, you win, whatever. I didn't know we was having us a contest."
Jenny started pushing Mildred's wheelchair on into the dining room.
"I'm just going to park you here, Miss Mildred. They'll start serving lunch here in just a little bit. I got to get back to my rounds. My shift is almost done."
And Jenny left, squeaky soles down the ringing hallway. Mildred sat alone at a round table, with place settings for four already laid out. She faced blindingly bright windows, so everything looked to be surrounded by glowing fog. The fog shifted and moved, lightened and darkened, blown by an airless wind. A dark shadow moved past, a ghost trying not to be noticed.
"Hello? Who's there?"
And just as Mildred said this, the room became bearable, as someone closed the blinds, bringing the rest of the room, the tables and chairs and carts, into near focus and exposure.
"It's just me, Gloria. You're down here plenty early, Mildred. Lunch isn't serving for another 20 minutes. "Oh, that damn Peggy pushed me down here about 100 miles an hour, and I never asked her to. Don't have kids. Don't ever have kids. They just break your heart and let you down. Never there when you really need them." "Well, a little late for that warning."
Gloria laughed, shaking her head.
"Now, your Peggy is real good to you, and I'm pretty sure she hasn't been to see you today. You must be thinking of Jenny. She was working your wing this morning. But, no, never mind. Don't matter. I, for one, am very glad to see you this fine day, Mildred. I, for one, am glad you came down early."
Gloria walked over, bent down, kissed Mildred on top of her head, then walked away into the kitchen service area.
"We're having Salisbury steak today,"
Gloria called back over her shoulder.
"The time is 10:48 a.m. The time is 10:55 a.m. The time is 11:02 a.m. The time is..."
The squeaking wheels, shuffling steps, and muttering voices of other residents closed in on Mildred like slowly rising water, quarter waking her from a half-sleep. She must have dozed, as someone had put a full-front, terry-cloth apron bib over her, velcroing it uncomfortably tight around her neck. "Again, like a goddamn infant," Mildred thought. As the word "goddamn" sounded in her mind, she thought of her old minister, Pastor Oilers, who said we should never use that word because of the commandments about not tempting God, which he said meant not telling God what to do. The pastor said if you hit your finger with a hammer and shouted, "Goddamn hammer," that you were telling God to send that hammer to hell, and that God didn't have time for such nonsense. "What bullshit," thought Mildred. "Goddamn bullshit. Yes, send this bullshit to hell and take this bib with you." And then out loud, "Goddamn this whole place!"
"What's the matter, Mildred?"
It was Viola, one of the regulars at her table. No one was really assigned a seat in the dining room, but everyone always sat in the same places, just like church.
"What's the matter, Mildred?"
Viola repeated.
Oh, nothing. I just woke up cranky, I think. I have such bad dreams anymore. I have a hard time telling what's my dreams and what's my real these days,"
Viola said sadly.
"I dreamed that my Donald was still here, and I woke up and I do swear he was sitting right there on my little sofa. And I tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't say a word. He just stared at me real hard. So I went back to sleep, and when I woke up again, he was gone. But him on that sofa was just as real as can be. I could even smell him."
Mildred knew all about seeing things, about seeing people she knew, and she knew were dead, and then people she didn't even know. Some of them were just faces floating in the air in front of her, horrible faces. Mildred had an eye doctor appointment last month. She'd told Peggy that she thought she was losing her damn mind, that she was seeing things, these faces that she knew just couldn't be real. Peggy had asked the eye doctor about that, and he had said, yes, that commonly happens with deteriorating vision. The eye isn't working right, but it's still sending information to the brain, and the brain is trying hard to make sense out of it. So it just gets put together into faces and objects that aren't really there. It happens a lot, the doctor had said.
Well, don't you think maybe you should tell people that it might happen before it actually does, so they won't think they're going crazy?
Peggy had asked him.
Yes, maybe we should,
the doctor had mused.
Goddamn doctors,
Mildred said, out loud again.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I can agree with that, said Clifton,
who was wheeling up to his regular place at the table.
I still say they killed Pat.
Clifton and his wife Pat were living here when Mildred first arrived. Clifton was already in a wheelchair then, but Pat was getting around just fine on her feet, and they seemed pretty happy with their situation. They had a nice double room with plenty of space for some of their own furniture. They even had goldfish. But Pat had suddenly gone downhill a few months ago, and that trip over to the hospital had been her last. After that, Mildred hadn't seen Clifton for a couple weeks. He ate alone in his room. Eventually, he started coming to the table again. But on his first day back at dinner, he had told them all that he didn't want to talk about Pat. Just leave it be. Mildred thought that was a strange request, but was actually relieved. I mean, what do you say? How many times can you say it?
Yes, we all miss her,
Viola said carefully, not wanting to go on about it.
I still say that doctor killed Pat,
Clifton said again.
She was just dehydrated, and they hooked her up to fluids, and they weren't paying attention, and she just plain drowned.
Well, Clifton, we'll never know, will we?
June said, as she took the last place at the table, the place that had been Pat's until a few months ago. Mildred didn't like this June, didn't trust her, wasn't sure how she came to join their table. For one thing, she was too young to be living here, and there didn't appear to be anything wrong with her. And she smiled too much. She wore too much makeup and dressed up when there was no occasion for it. Where did she think she was, or where did she think she was going? Why was she here at all?
Why are you here?
Mildred's thoughts became words.
Well,
and June paused.
Because it's lunchtime.
No, I mean, why do you live here? You look like you could get along just fine on your own. Why would anyone live here if they didn't have to?
The smile that June usually held without thinking let go and flattened into a blank expression. A trace of tears coming to her eyes, June looked down unfocused on the table. Just as a plate with a Salisbury steak, brown gravy puddling around the green beans, was slid in front of her.
Now, Mildred, don't be mean,
Viola piped up.
We've talked about this before. June has troubles, and we're glad she's here, if that helps her. And we hope those old troubles stay on the back burner, don't we, Clifton?
Clifton was staring out the window. Other plates with other Salisbury steaks and more gravy on green beans were placed around the table. June continued to stare down, not touching her food, and the others ate in silence. Mildred didn't mention to anyone that she wanted fish, not steak.
I guess I done it now,
Mildred finally said.
Just be still, Mildred,
Viola said in a hush.
And goddamn you too,
Mildred said in a clenched whisper.
The time is 12:49 p.m.
Back in her room, Mildred was helped by a woman she always called Carol, even though her name was really Carla, onto the bed for her afternoon nap. In a very short time, she was deep asleep and dreaming. She was in another bed, not the hard, narrow one with side rails that she hated, that crinkled when she rolled over, but a big, wide bed with a feather mattress and a down comforter, both cupping around her. Cool, clean, white sheets, not stiff, but crisp. She lifted up the top sheet that was tucked around her shoulders and saw that she was naked and young. Mildred saw a body that she remembered but hadn't thought of in a long time, like a fine acquaintance she had completely forgotten she even knew. She ran a hand down her neck, onto her chest, then her stomach, her pubic hair, her thigh. Then she was high above the bed, looking down on herself. The face of the sleeping woman in the big, perfect bed was her own face, the one she had now, all lines and spots. Her hair was a flat mess, her dentures were missing, which made her look so old, and her smudged glasses were on crooked. Floating Mildred reached down and touched the sheet that covered sleeping Mildred. She ran her hand over the sheet, feeling the soft rises of herself. Sleeping Mildred smiled, then opened one eye.
"I'm both," she said.
Floating Mildred put her hand on the shoulder of sleeping Mildred and caressed her, then shook her gently, then a little harder. All Mildreds cracked their eyes, not sure of which bed, which room, which body.
"Dear, dear, you need to wake up, Mildred."
The breathy voice of Carol Carla was all syrup and sand, smelled like cigarettes.
"If you nap too long, you won't be able to sleep tonight, and
anyways, there's a music program this afternoon you ought to go to. You'd enjoy it, I think."
"Oh, can't you let me sleep?"
Mildred was almost desperate.
"I was having a good dream. I was so pretty. And I think Vernon was coming to see me,"
she whimpered, just a tiny bit.
"You wake up slow now, and I'll come back and check on you in 5, and help you get in your chair and to the bathroom before the music starts."
She patted Mildred again, then left the room. Mildred wished she could go back in the dream. It made her happy. She reached up and felt her neck. Yes, it was wrinkled, but it was soft and smooth. It felt nice, yes, it did. Mildred ran her hand on down her chest, inside her blouse and bra, cupping her breast and pressing on her nipple. No one had touched her. No one had squeezed her body in a very long time. This is what it felt like. She hadn't forgotten that. She remembered her young body, remembered how it looked under that dream sheet. This was the same body. She felt it. She was both. But this body, this now body, was stiff and aching after a nap and hadn't been able to walk or stand on its own for over a year now. This was the friend that had betrayed her, that Mildred would never forgive. God damn her anyway.
The time is 2:35 p.m.
Carla returned and helped Mildred with the chair in the bathroom. She even took a minute and brushed Mildred's hair and wiped her glasses clean.
"There now, you're ready to go to the dance,"
Carla smiled, then paused.
"You know what you need."
And Carla went over to the brown metal set of drawers, opening the top one. She came back with a pair of Mildred's clip-on earrings, the yellow ones that looked like daisies, gently pinching each one onto Mildred's ears.
"I think you're still pretty,"
Carla said, bending down and taking Mildred's face in her hands.
"I am, aren't I?"
And Mildred forced a smile.
"Do you want me to push you down to the main dining room for the afternoon music?"
Carla asked.
"Just get me out in the hall and I'll go the rest myself. Do you think I have time?"
"Oh, yeah, they don't start for 15 minutes, and them's most always late."
Carla pushed Mildred's chair out the door and pointed her down the hallway, then walked away in the opposite direction. And there was the hallway that never ended. Oh, it turned and narrowed and dead-ended some places, but Mildred felt like she could roll for days and never see the end of it. It took several aches of exertion and painful grips on the wheels to get the chair going, but finally she was in motion. Mildred always felt like she was in a rowboat, working against the current, the distinct sensation of moving backwards if she stopped pushing and rolling. There were several people on her wing who had motorized wheelchairs, but Mildred didn't want that. That was admitting that this was how it was going to be forever. And even though it likely was, Mildred was going to pretend otherwise. Anyway, Peggy was too goddamn cheap. The wide entryway to the main dining room was jammed up with other wheelchairs, a few oxygen bottles, and some employees just standing around. The music had already started, and Mildred could hear the rattle and plink of a guitar and banjo, and the scratching, out-of-tune wanderings of a fiddle. Mildred had never been musically inclined during her life, never really cared for music that much, but even she could tell these people were not very good. Mildred worked her way through the maze of chairs and people, finding a parking spot between Vanda and Nellie, two other women from her wing, both of whom she had known most of her life, neither of whom she had any desire to talk to. Their false, chatty cheerfulness was even worse than the ones who sat around and blubbered all day. One song ended, there was an attempt at applause, and another song began, which sounded almost identical to the one that just ended. The band was a young girl, maybe 12, on guitar, a man that looked to be her father on banjo, and some other man, maybe that was her father, meandering uncertainly on the fiddle. They were all sitting on folding chairs and looked scared to death. Circles of wrong chords and sliding fiddle notes soured the air, and the song fell apart, a sort of ending.
"Now, if any of you uns feel like dancing, don't let us stop you,"
the dad with the banjo said.
"And dance in your chairs if that's what you need to do."
They started up again, a vehicle sputtering, intent on crashing. But the girl with the guitar stood up and something changed. She fixed her eyes on a spot well above the heads of the listeners and started to sing. Her voice was clear and steady. No nervous vibrato or mannerisms. It was just human. That was the word that came to Mildred's mind. She sounded like a human singing.
"Oh, I'll twine with my mingles and waving black hair, with the roses so red and the lilies so fair, and the myrtle so bright with the emerald dew, the pale and the leader and eyes look like blue."
Mildred recognized the melody but couldn't name it. The fiddle took over for a verse, then the girl looked out to her spot and started again.
"Oh, I'll twine with my mingles and waving black hair."
It was the same verse. She only knew the one, it seemed. But that didn't matter so much to Mildred. It was just the gentle joy of hearing this girl sing, to see her stare out into a blank future and throw pretty words against a noisy life. For those few moments that she opened her mouth, things seemed to make some kind of sense. Sounds that did not matter quieted down, and sounds that did matter lined up into something logical, something that seemed right. As the banjo took the melody for a turn, and the girl was about to sing that verse for a third time, June, that June, the one from the dining room, the one that shouldn't be here, stepped right in front of the band and began to dance. It started with that old kind of dancing, like she was kicking a can, maybe two cans, down the road, arms crooked at the elbow and swinging like she was shooing flies with a dish towel. June's dance alternated between sort of graceful, like she knew what she was doing and how she looked, then over into strange variations, hopping on one foot for a while, doing the twist, even a few seconds of ballerina twirling. It got hard to watch. The band seemed very glad that someone was reacting to their music and that someone else was maybe distracting from their self-consciousness. They grinned at June as she danced, and the tempo of the song kept getting a little faster and a little faster. June was sweating now, her hair sticking to her face in dark strings. She had started her dance smiling, but now she was not. There was a wide-eyed look of fever and desperation, even panic on her face, blotchy now in pink, yellow, and red patterns, maple leaves on a sidewalk. And the song ended. The band was looking at June all smiles, like something had been revealed, but no one applauded, the only sound being a man bumping into a table as he rolled out of the room, saying, "Martha! Martha!" June was still standing there in front of the band, staring blankly at the floor, just as she had stared at the table at lunchtime, when things had gotten all tense and quiet.
"There is no call for all that."
These were the words Mildred heard someone say. Then she realized the words were only in her head, waiting to be spoken, to be hurled. But they stopped and stayed there, waiting. The pause, The silence was uncomfortable for everyone. Inviting someone to say something, probably something funny, probably something at June's expense.
"Honey, you danced for all of us that can't no more."
Mildred heard somebody say that, like from a distance, almost an echo, then realized that she had said it her own self. June looked up from the floor, still sweating and breathing hard, the look of an animal about to die or to lunge. Then June smiled, an awful and uncomfortable smile, but a smile nonetheless. A few people applauded, but it didn't catch on. June raised both hands high above her head, then did a deep bow, her right leg crossing behind her, stretched and straight. Mildred had only seen that on TV. June exited, stage right, as they say, across the tile floor, pushing the door bar and walking out the emergency exit, setting off the alarm, breaking into a run. A nurse and janitor hurried after her, the one using his key to shut off the ringing bell. Through the window, they all disappeared around the corner toward the highway. Random voices and words started filling the space, like bugs through the briefly open door.
"I think it's about dinner time, I think.
I need to go."
"Now, we don't do that, do we, dear?
There was a place we used to go.
The old rugged cross."
But the musicians were already putting their instruments into their cases. The singing guitar girl looked all around the room, wide-eyed and forced smile, almost an apology. As Mildred worked her wheelchair around this sleeping person and that slow one, she passed close behind the girl, who had not yet put her guitar into its case, which lay on the floor by Mildred's intended path. Rolling close, Mildred looked down into the open case and saw a long blue cable with gold-pointed ends, for making the guitar loud, she suspected. Leaning far and reaching down, Mildred picked up the cable in a single grab, looked at it only an instant, then tucked it under her thigh and rolled on out the exit into the hallway, catching just a glimpse of Big Jimmy and his buffer machine rounding the corner, out of sight, except for the orange snake following him.
The time is 3:21 p.m.
"Do you gotta use the bathroom, hon?"
It was Carol, or Carla, again.
"You got some time before dinner, and it's such a nice day. Would you like me to roll you outside by the picnic table on the patio? There are several others out there already, just getting a little fresh air and sunshine whilst y'all got the chance." "No, I don't got to go,"
Mildred said.
"And I haven't been outside in a long time. I think that would be nice."
Carol Carla hit the button to open the door, pushing Mildred's wheelchair over the bump of the threshold and down the skinny sidewalk to the brick patio. There was a single picnic table and a puny maple tree. A few people sat at the picnic table while the ones in wheelchairs crowded together in the small circle of shade. The day was hot, very hot, but there was a breeze which made it bearable. The sky was flat open blue. Carla parked Mildred in the half shade next to the picnic table, beside a woman named Rhonda who sat at the end of the bench. This Rhonda had been pretty nice to talk to when Mildred first arrived, nearly 8 years ago now. Mildred had casually known her before, when Rhonda ran a fabric store just off the square, 30-40 years ago. But Rhonda had been drifting away slowly, losing her grip and her bearings. Most all the time now, she carried a little baby doll around with her, cradling it carefully, a protective mother. She didn't say much anymore, just sang "Patty Cake" to her little doll. But Rhonda was still on her feet, still walking around with the best of them. Mildred did resent that, and it caused her to wonder why some lost their minds and some their legs. Rhonda did seem happy.
"Well, Mildred, how are you doing today?"
Rhonda said. Quite a surprise. She hadn't spoken a word to Mildred in the past 6 months.
"Oh, I guess I'm okay,"
Mildred answered.
"How about yourself?"
"Me and Linda Lou, we're having a fine time. It's Danny's birthday, you know."
"Who's Danny?"
"You know, my boy Danny, the one that's in the service,"
Rhonda answered forcefully, seeming frustrated that Mildred didn't remember her Danny.
"I don't think I ever knew Danny,"
Mildred said.
But I hope he has a nice birthday. Are you going to see him?
As far as Mildred knew, Rhonda hadn't left the place in months, maybe years.
Well, here he comes now,
Rhonda said suddenly and excitedly. Mildred looked across the parking lot, angling her head so she could sort of see the driveway entrance, but there were no cars moving.
I don't see anybody,
she said, turning back to Rhonda. But Rhonda wasn't looking at the parking lot. She was pointing up into the sky.
There he is! There he is! He's been fighting in Vietnam for a long time, but he's flown over here today just to see me.
Mildred wasn't going to tell Rhonda that Vietnam had been over for a while. No point in that. Mildred looked at the ground and shook her head. It was damn pitiful and mean what age did to some people. But that thought was interrupted by an approaching mechanical thump, thump, thump. Indeed, a sound she had heard on TV news back in the days of the war. Mildred looked at Rhonda, who was looking up at the sky, and followed her gaze there, cocking her head 2 from 12 so she might see it clearly. Rhonda's reality bled into Mildred's as a large helicopter passed low overhead. There was no explanation other than Rhonda's. The whole group of shade-seekers raised their gaze to the sky, some watching the passing helicopter, some looking back in the direction where it came like there might be more following it. The copter was now receding from view, but then slowed and hovered, began circling back. It did a wide loop around the vicinity, the people on the patio craning necks and bumping wheelchairs trying to follow the movements of the helicopter. It sank and disappeared behind the next rise, over in the direction of the high school and the football field.
Do you suppose it crashed?
Someone said, strangely calm and slow.
No, it was moving down pretty level and gradual-like. I flew in one of them back in the service, and they never crash. Well, most never.
I would be scared to death,
a woman said in a shaky voice.
Danny, Danny, it's my Danny,
said Rhonda. The woman seated on the other side of Mildred leaned over and whispered,
"It ain't Danny."
Then the helicopter reappeared, a sharp vertical above the near horizon, tipped forward and flew away to the east at a surprising speed, the sound of the engine tapering off into nothing. Just breeze.
Huh. Wonder what that was all about.
Think they runned out of gas?
No, not likely. Maybe picking somebody up or dropping somebody off. I flew in one of them back in the service.
Huh. Maybe we could get them to take us to the store.
And some people laughed.
Patty cake, patty cake.
The time is 3:44 p.m.
June wasn't at the dinner table. No one mentioned her absence or her dance. Clifton talked about a baseball game his kids had taken him to in the city. Mildred knew that trip had happened a year ago, even though Clifton talked about it like it had been this afternoon. Mildred told them about the helicopter and asked if either of them knew about Rhonda's family, but they didn't. Viola just sat silently and picked at her dinner. Voices at the next table over were getting louder. An argument was starting.
Jesus said wine, and he meant wine. Substituting grape juice, well, you might as well serve hamburgers and french fries instead of the body of Christ. Scripture is scripture.
Who is that, and why is he so upset?
Mildred asked, kind of loud. Viola shushed her. This man was new. He'd only arrived last week, and Mildred had not met him or heard anyone say much about him other than he was from out of town. The man was shouting now.
You Baptists, you're so specific when it comes to baptizing. It's got to be all or nothing. But with the Lord's Supper, you'll just substitute stuff like it's a diner menu. And you Catholics, heck, you don't even bother giving everyone the wine. You save that for your dang priests. You don't think they pulled a fast one on you there?
The man stood up from the table and scanned the room, looking over the heads of the other residents with certain superiority, like it was something he was used to doing. He waved his right hand in an arc, a broad and meaningless gesture, then began a dramatic exit from the room. The drama of the scene was lost as he wrestled to get his walker into place.
Oh, sit down, Edgar,
someone at his table said and chuckled. A staff member came over and put a hand on the man's shoulder, guiding him back into his chair, speaking softly and soothingly to him, something about Jesus loves all of us.
"He's a retired minister,"
Clifton said, leaning to the center of the table.
"Lutheran, I think. He's from Pennsylvania, but his kids live here, and they moved him down to be closer. He's not too happy about it. He's not too happy about anything. And if you can't tell, don't bring up church around him. But we all know those first few weeks and months can be a pretty rough adjustment. He'll be all right."
"I'll pray for him,"
Viola offered.
"You might ask his permission first,"
and Clifton laughed.
"You might be doing it wrong."
The regular quiet settled back into place in the dining room. Puddings were served, trays and aprons were gathered, faces were wiped, pills were distributed. Chairs, walkers, shuffling feet headed off in different directions. Mildred was wheeling her chair back toward her room, but making slow progress. She was so tired and weak by the end of every day, and the hallway floor seemed slanted now, uphill all the way back.
"Hon, could you use a push?"
It was that Carol, that Carla.
"How about I roll you down, 'cause you got somebody waiting there for you in your room? I'm about to clock out for the day. The night staff will be showing up in a bit."
Carla already had her purse over her shoulder and her lanyard badge in her hand. Without waiting for an answer, Carla took the handles and pushed Mildred's chair down the hall at a brisk clip. When they rolled into the room, Peggy was sitting on the small couch, a pinched and impatient look on her face. She was wearing a blouse of tiny stripes that Mildred found uncomfortable to look at.
"Hi, Mom,"
Peggy said. And that was it for a while.
The time is 5:15 p.m.
Carla set her purse and lanyard on the side table while she helped Mildred out of the wheelchair and into the recliner.
"You gonna go drink some beer tonight?"
Peggy asked Carla, and they began talking about the festival over in Shorter and how hot it was going to be. As Carla's back was to her and blocked Peggy from her vision, Mildred reached over and picked up Carla's lanyard from the side table, sliding it down into the crack of the chair cushion where she felt the blue guitar cable she had stashed there before dinner. The younger women went on for a while, said they might see each other there later, then goodbye. Carla picked up her purse and headed out of the room and down the hallway. Mildred settled into her recliner, pulling up the footrest, letting go a sigh.
"Wilma Thornton died,"
Peggy started.
"That's too bad, and a terrible way to begin a conversation." "Well, I thought you'd want to know. She was a friend of yours."
Peggy was looking at the ceiling and the pictures on the wall, anywhere but at Mildred.
"So, anything new going on around here?"
"What do you think?"
Mildred was already getting sleepy.
The time is 5:21 p.m.
"So, that watch is working okay for you? It wasn't cheap,"
Peggy said.
"No, I believe it's slow. It must be 8 o'clock already, don't you think?"
"No, Mom, that's the right time. 5:21. Why, are you in a hurry for me to leave? You going somewhere?"
"What do you think?"
"Yeah, you already said that."
Peggy seemed to be getting her thoughts and her courage together.
"Mom, I need to talk to you about something, and you're not going to like it."
"What happened now? Are you and Lloyd splitting up?"
Mildred said, shaking her head, still looking down at her watch.
"Nothing happened now,"
Peggy punched the words.
"Why do you always have to be that way, acting like I'm messing up again?"
She stood up and walked a few steps over to the window. There was an empty, broken bird feeder on the ground outside.
"We might be moving to the city. Lloyd's had a job interview with a trucking company up there in Independence, and he thinks he's going to get offered. It would be local routes, no over the road no more. We're both sick of them long trips. It'd be good for us, good for the kids, better money, good all the way around. But we'd have to move up there because the routes start real early."
"Well, that sounds like a good thing. Maybe if you got a bigger house up there, you'd have room for me."
Peggy turned from the window, avoiding eye contact with Mildred, eyebrows raised in exasperation.
Now, Mom, you know that isn't going to happen. We tried it before, and it's just too much for all of us. So let's not even go there. I'm telling you this because, well, because if we move, and it's looking like a pretty sure thing we will, I'm going to be 2.5 hours away. I won't be able to see you as often or get you things you need as quick.
Peggy paused, trying to figure out an ending.
We'll just have to make some adjustments. You mean I'll have to make some adjustments?
Mildred said bitterly.
You never think of me, how these things affect me. Mom, that ain't so. But I got a bunch of other people to think about and take care of and figure out what's best for. Bottom line, this job for Lloyd will make the kids' lives better, and there's better schools up there in the city. The staff here does weekly runs to Walmart if you need anything. I've been doing that for you, but they can do it just as well.
But you won't be coming to check on me every few days. I do look forward to that. You're about the only person I get to talk to that don't work here.
Peggy sifted her words, trying to filter out all the bad thoughts and bad things she might say.
Mom, you're just going to have to make an effort to socialize more with the other folks here. I don't understand it. There's at least, what, 20 people here that you've known most of your life, but you all just sit in your rooms and only see each other at meals. Why aren't you visiting each other? Why aren't you swapping stories about the good old days? I mean, Shirley Michaels is just 2 doors down, and you and her used to work the election board together. And old man Rainey, what's his name? Fritz? He's just down the hall. You and Dad used to play cards with him and his wife. Why don't you old people go to each other's rooms and keep each other company more? I don't get it.
I don't want anybody coming in my room,
Mildred said.
It's my room, the only room I've got. I don't want a bunch of nosies coming in here. And I think most of the others feel that same way.
Well, that doesn't make any sense to me at all,
Peggy said, finally raising her eyes to look at her mother.
And when I hear people talk about what their life used to be, where they used to live, what they used to do, oh, it just makes me feel worse, like everything is over with. You don't know. You can't know what this feels like. It's like somebody put a barrel over you and you can't get out.
Peggy was back at the window now, staring away into the middle distance, not focusing.
I gotta go, Mom. I told the kids I'd bring pizza home for dinner. I'd tell you I'm sorry about all this, but I'm not. I'm really not. I can't be. This is what has to happen next.
There was a polite knock on the door frame. Not a can I come in knock, but a I am coming in kind of knock.
Hey, darling. It showers tonight, and I'm running behind schedule. You ready to go, or do you want me to come back later when your company leaves?
It's okay. I was just going,
Peggy said.
Mom, I'll talk to you again in a few days.
Peggy absently kissed Mildred on top of the head and squeezed past the woman in the doorway. Mildred sat on the plastic chair in the large shower tub, tightly gripping the handrail on the wall next to her. She was naked now, but not cold. It was very warm and steamy in the shower room. The night woman, was her name Deb, was running water with the sprayer hose and feeling it with her hand to check the temperature. Without her glasses, everything was a soft, dark blur. Mildred looked down at her body, remembering the afternoon dream she'd had, where she was young under those sheets. For all she knew at this moment, she might still look like that. But the ache in her hips told her that wasn't so.
I can't sit on this hard thing too long,
Mildred told Deb.
I'll be quick,
Deb answered.
You raise your arms and hold your legs apart.
There was the warm pressure of water across her back, around her arms, and rudely up through the slats in the bench. Mildred always forgot about that part, and it gave her a jolt.
Now tip your head back and we'll get some shampoo in your hair.
Eyes already closed, Mildred leaned her head back, face to the ceiling. Memories flickered of her mother washing her hair in the sink, of Vernon hovering behind her in that old bathtub when they were first married, of nameless girls at the beauty shop shampooing her before the perm and color. This was nice. It felt good to be touched.
The time is 7:03 p.m.
Mildred was back in her room and in bed now, thin blanket pulled up under her chin, feeling slightly chilled. Her hair was still damp, and the air conditioner was blowing on her from across the room. It was still light outside. Mildred could tell by the glow seeping out around the drawn curtains.
I used to be a night owl,
she thought, remembering how she would stay up late reading romance novels, back when she could still see the print. It seemed like such a waste to go to bed this early. She was tired, but not sleepy. But what else was there to do? This was when they put you to bed, so that's what time you did it. Mildred closed her eyes for some long seconds, hoping that the first feelings of sleepiness would come, but they didn't. When she opened her eyes, there were some outlines, like dark cutouts, across the room, near the sofa, maybe sitting on it. Mildred reached over to the lamp table and felt for her glasses. She put them on and twisted her head to get the dark center spot away from where she was trying to see. Mildred saw a man with a small black dog at his side, sitting silently on the sofa. There was another person there too, but Mildred couldn't make them out. She thought she could hear the dog panting.
What are you doing in here?
Mildred said forcefully. The man didn't move or answer.
Why don't you say something?
The dog didn't move either, still as a statue.
I have a shotgun here in my closet, and I will get it if you don't leave. And now!
Mildred thought she saw the dog move a little, but the other figures did not budge, did not answer.
I said now!
As much of a shout as she could manage. The ceiling light came on in a harsh flash of reality. Mildred clenched her eyes tightly shut and raised a hand to her brow.
Oh, my God,
she said in a high voice.
Where did they go?
Deary dear.
It was Deb of the night shift.
Are you okay, Mildred?
There was people in my room and a damn dog.
And Mildred got choked on the last word and hacked and coughed.
I think you was having a bad dream,
Deb said.
There's nobody here.
She came into the room, over to Mildred's bed. No hurry.
You was dreaming and seeing things. Why do you got your glasses on?
Because I'm not dreaming, and I'm not asleep, and I'm not seeing things. There was somebody there, right there.
Oh, Lord. Well, we won't argue about that,
Deb said.
Tell you what, I'll keep a close eye on the hall and on your door, and we'll turn the table light on. Will that make you feel better, more secure?
Oh, heavens,
Mildred sighed heavily.
I guess so.
Deb stroked Mildred's hair, at the same time gently pushing her back against the pillows and bringing the sheet and blanket up around her neck.
I got to make the rest of my rounds, but I'll come back and check on you. You gonna be all right? I think you are.
Mildred didn't answer, just clenched her eyes and lips, her whole face into a puckered knot, and shook her head, then a long shiver. Deb gently took the glasses from Mildred's face and placed them back on the lamp table, turning on the small light.
I'm going to lay the buzzer right here by your left hand. You just press it if you get scared again. I'll be back real soon,
she said, turning off the overhead as she left the room. Mildred lay there motionless for several minutes, then slowly opened her eyes, fully expecting the dark figures and the dog to be on her sofa again, but they were not. She felt the buzzer on its long cable near her hand. With her other hand, she reached up higher on that cable and gave it a sturdy pull, then another. It was secured tight to a plate on the wall. Leaning hard against the side rail of this uncomfortable bed, Mildred reached far and a little farther to the arm of her recliner chair. Her fingers could barely reach over and down into the crack of the seat cushion. But there was nothing there, and she remembered that the lanyard and the guitar wire that she had hid there were on the opposite side, which she could not reach. She would have to remember tomorrow to move them to the other side of the cushion.
The time is 7:56 p.m.